Well, welcome to the roundtable for July 31st. Hard to believe we're already at the end of July. We're going to have Chris from Combat Studies Group back on this week. Trooper from Trooper Care Network. New member, Scott. He's a proprietor of Future Conflict. And Joe Dolio, author of the Tactical Wisdom series. And we'll cover a lot of ground tonight. We're going to start off with why digital tradecraft is and digital security is so important, especially nowadays with the fact that they're going to take people offline. And we may get Bracken. I'm not sure if he's going to jump on or not, but let's bring everybody on. Gents, how are you? Are you still getting an echo on my end? Hopefully not.
No, it's good on ours.
No, it's pretty solid.
Good. It's not a good roundtable without 30 minutes of cursory IT setup. That's usually how it goes for us. 30 minutes of trying to figure out why shit doesn't work. So, Chris, I'm going to let you start off because this is your domain, and now I'll chime in.
Okay. So, as you know, I just had a week-long gunfight concepts course up in Montana, and it was exceptionally hot at 108 for a couple days. So good training, pretty miserable. Couple of things that kind of stood out in that class, and I've seen it in other classes, is, you know, they'll find out that I teach this other aspect of skills, and inevitably I get the, hey, I'm an operator, I'm a shooter, that's not my problem, I don't want to deal with tech, I don't understand tech, I hate tech, I don't, you know, pick one of the above. And so this is a real common refrain I see a lot. And, you know, anyone that's spent any time on the pointy end knows intelligence drives the fight. And what we're really trying to do is de-weaponize all this tech we have that is feeding into the intelligence apparatus of our opposition, essentially. Okay. So, you know, and I'm not picking on the guy in the class, you know, he's a good dude. And I was trying to get him to understand this does matter to you. And this is a subject that's worthy of digging into, you know, and there's a lot of other guys covering it as well. Scout covers it. Mike Shelby from Forward Observer touches on this stuff. You know, and we have a lot of real world examples at J6. I hate to bring up J6 again, but why are they still arresting those guys? What's driving that? Yeah. It's their phones. So, you know, I will often get the Luddite response of, well, I'm throwing my phone away. Are you? Are you really? Because I don't know about you, but I actually run a business. I have family members and I need to communicate with them. And frankly, there's a lot of really useful tools that I can leverage in my end on these devices. So I don't want to necessarily throw them out. Again, we're looking at how can I defang them? How can I de-weaponize them? Okay. And you can do it to limited degrees, depends on the equipment. So we'll start with phones. When you deconstruct a phone, you essentially have the handset and you have the SIM card. Okay. And of course there are eSIMs, which are software driven SIM cards these days. The hardware is identified through what's called an IMEI, International Mobile Equipment Identifier. And this is universal. You're going to find this in any country. It's about a 17 long character code. So it's mostly like a serial number, but embedded in that code is the issuing region or the region that this phone was sold into, because just like we have an FCC that says, hey, we can use this frequency for this and this one for that, other countries have a similar thing. And so different phones are for different markets. So if I were to go buy a bunch of burner phones in Bangladesh and start using them here as a burner phone, do you think that's going to throw up some red flags? I mean, it's a legit question, and that may or may not have happened, but it's just something to be aware of. Okay, so the IMEI is tied to the handset. The IMEI gets sent to the tower anytime there's a substantial change in activity with the handset. Okay, so I'm making a call. The IMEI gets sent to the BTS, which is the tower. All right, along with that, the IMSI or the IMSI, which we all hear about, the Stingrays, you know, the IMSI catchers. So that's your international mobile subscriber identity. That's tied to your persona. So that's your identity. Okay, so, if you have an account with AT&T, your name, your phone number, all your white side information is tied to that IMSI. All right. And that IMSI is being pinged to the tower about every 3 to 5 seconds. All right. So it's got a constant heartbeat of where that phone is so that it can do handoff with that phone going from tower to tower to tower. Okay. Which is why, you know, we can enjoy a call without breaks as we're traveling. All right. So we can be tracked through an IMEI, and there's not much you can do about that. It's hard burned into the phone. the IMSI. That's actually pretty trivial to get rid of. You can go and get a track phone, get a, you know, a throwaway burner, if you will, IMSI. But remember, once you've run a phone with their white side identity, your IMEI is now married to that IMSI forever. You following me? All right. So another thing that gets used, and this one doesn't get thought of very often, but both iPhones and Android phones utilize what's called an advertising ID. It's buried in the system. And again, this is for analytics and advertising, but it is trackable. Okay. And so the three-letter agencies know how to do that. That is something that gets leveraged. I'll say this. If you are using a more secure phone, and there's several out there now, I have my own, and there's other people making them. Eric Prince is making one now. They will mask or randomize that advertising ID. So that essentially is no longer an identifier. And if you're practicing good human tradecraft, such as keeping your Bluetooth off, keeping the NFC off, not leaving the Wi-Fi on. If you walk around with your Wi-Fi turned on your phone, every time you pass a Wi-Fi access point at Starbucks, at McDonald's, driving down the street, somebody's house, you have all these, you have a stored list in your phone of every Wi-Fi point you've ever connected to on that phone. That list gets handed over. Okay, that list gets shared. So this is part of, if you go to wiggle.net, okay, this is part of the whole war driving thing. All right, where guys will go around and actually locate these Wi-Fi points. So again, you can't remove the human equation from this stuff. There's no easy button. Phones are dangerous. You can make them a lot safer. You should always have an RF pouch available to make that thing go dark if you need to. And I mean, for crying out loud, if the J6 people just didn't have phones with them or had burners, they'd have nothing to go on besides facial recognition. So that's a huge one. And what's another one we're seeing right now? I'm seeing all over Twitter.
The other thing I was going to chime in with is that you, your phone is also, especially an iPhone, it's polling and taking pictures of you all the time.
Yes.
So the facial recognition is flashing every 3 minutes. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, because I watched it one night, it was shipping data across Wi-Fi back to Apple.
Yep.
And if you set up so you can watch the traffic on your network, you can literally watch your phone when it transmits. And then if you turn off the lights and you get a black light, you can see the flash of the IR camera going off, taking pictures of your room, taking pictures of wherever it's at, wherever it's sitting, it's polling all the time. And there's two regions of the phone. There's a radio region and there's a software region. Mm-hmm. And the software region is application layer communication. So it's transmitting HTTPS, HTTP, and it's going across the internet. Even if you have the phone in just Wi-Fi mode, it's going to transmit application data. So if you're wondering why Facebook, why Amazon, why Siri is listening, it's because they're listening to your conversations. They're listening, or watching your movement, listening to your conversations. And they're correlating all that with your buying decisions, with your activity, with your tertiary and primary friends. They're building bipartite maps of your entire life so that they can sell you goods and services. And the intelligence community is collecting information just to see what your pattern of behavior is. So even if you turn the phone off, I can instantiate the phone with the phone powered down and turn the mic on, turn the camera on. I did it all the time at Motorola. In fact, the Razor was such a funky pile of shit, but you could turn everything on, the screen off, and nobody would ever know that it was actually active. And you could initiate a call remotely from the phone and listen into whatever, or just turn on the mic and listen in. So as secure as you think you are, this is still the biggest surveillance device that's being used against us. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, those are all valid points. And I'll say this, and people hate hearing this. There's no way to harden an iPhone. There's no way for you to harden your MacBook, your Apple product. I'm sorry. Yeah, they're sexy machines and they claim to have a better security model, but you're not safe from them. Just like on Google devices, the biggest threat, because Google actually does pretty good security, as does Apple, as far as keeping outsider threats out, but you're not safe from them as a threat. Okay. And that is the biggest issue. Okay. With Apple and Google. Now the difference is with a quote unquote Google product, and I'm looking at Android specifically, it's built off an open source project, which means you can drill back to the open source AOSP and build, because it's open source, build something out of it, such as Graphene or Calyx or some of these other privacy focused Android phones. So there's some confusion when people say Android. Android isn't always Android. There's Google Android, and then there are other Androids, some more secure than others. And any of these privacy phones on the market, they're all going to be running some variant of Android open source. Okay. Does that mean you're perfectly safe with that phone? No, it does not. All right. It does trim a lot of that low-hanging fruit away, so it does mitigate a lot of the risks. But here's the thing, guys. If you're doing something serious, if all of us are going to go have a meeting and we're going to discuss some life and death stuff, okay, or some proprietary business stuff that, you know, that's patent pending, whatever, phones don't come in the room, okay? Phones are turned off. They're isolated from each other. And it basically, if anyone's been in a SCIF, same rules apply. SCIF rules, that is the way to go. Keep the tech out of there. Keep the smart TVs out of there. Keep the IoT stuff. The smart refrigerator.
Going to church.
What?
Called going to church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just keep that stuff out of the room. But as far as like your daily life, you know, what I would call a white side phone or a gray side phone, there are some good options out there. Apple will aggressively listen to you even when you think it's turned off. It's always listening. What you were mentioning about the pictures, some of that iPhones do will be doing captures periodically, but a lot of what people see, because I'll have guys in like a night ops class and they're running nods and they see their phone pulsing with an IR light. That's a proximity sensor. Okay. That's how, when you raise that thing up to your head, it knows to disable the screen, the digitizer, so you're not, you know, pushing buttons and just wasting battery by, you know, having the screen on when it's up to your ear. So some of what you're seeing is that is a proximity sensor, which is not nefarious all by itself. But, you know, for example, my phones, you can turn off every sensor on the phone. You can just kill them. So that is a good option. There are some phones out there that have hardware switches where you can disable the baseband. You can disable the cellular radio with a hardware switch, and that's pretty optimal. So I will say this, I'm still not a fan of ATAC. This always comes up in classes. Guys want to run the ATAC. They want to have the little, you know, chest rig like they had on Navy SEALs with the, you know, because it's
yeah, cold. It's just silly to run ATACs. You're just telling everyone where you are and what you're doing.
It's not worth the risk. Even if you had a high level of confidence that you set everything up on it properly, okay?
You'll have to explain what an ATAC is to the audience, because there's a lot of people that won't know what that is.
So it's Android Tactical Application Toolkit. It's basically like a miniaturized version of Blue Force Tracker. So it gives me a real-time ability to see blue forces or friendly forces I'm working with. I can put target reference points on there. I can call in air assets. I can call in indirect fires. There's a million things this thing does that could be very useful for someone out with a modern army on a battlefield. But for partisans up in the wood line doing, you know, partisan stuff, it's just a danger. It's just a danger. You know, I think it definitely has a place in something like search and rescue operations. Not CSAR, but just civilian side search and rescue, okay, where there's a low threat model. But anything that's high threat model, it's not doing anything for me, you know? So, and I know some guys don't want to hear that, and I'm sure there's some counter arguments, but that's just where I'm at. You know, I'm a tech guy, but I also recognize tech is a double-edged sword. It can definitely harm you. So,
To me, it's a drone target is what it really is, because if you have it, I look at it this way. So if Ukraine has taught us anything, it's that drones are going to be used extensively from here forward until there's an effective counter. And they've used all sizes of drones. They have surveillance drones. They have small drones that drop bombs. They have big drones that are bombs. They have big drones that drop bombs. You've seen just about every concatenation that you can see of that. And to me, anything that's emitting a signal is calling in air. Whether you like it or not, it's calling in an airstrike on you. And, there's at some point you're going to have to take the chance to use some kind of EM emitting tools to be able to shoot, move, and communicate, right? So it's the trade-off of what the operational loss is going to be versus the intelligence gain. And you're going to make those risk-based decisions as you go through whatever the threat environment is, right? But a big thing is, once hostilities kick off, this goes in the trash because it'll be useless at that point. And you'll probably be turning on a radio, doing some squawks, turning off a radio at specific times as you're moving around, at least if you're going to use, good OPSEC. So, and there's lots of counters to this. I'm just pointing out some general thoughts about, comms as we move forward. But as the security guy in me, I will say three things. First, turn your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth off when you're traveling somewhere. You're in a coffee shop. You're on an airplane, because your Bluetooth is polling everything in the airplane or everything in the coffee shop. And people are listening. It's really easy to connect to your phone without you knowing about it and scraping data. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you're going to use banking, you're going to use any kind of financial institutions or financial software on your phone, do not put TikTok, do not put Facebook, do not put Instagram, WeChat, or any of the rest of those social media platforms on your phone, because it's the first thing they do is scrape your phone. Everything you do on TikTok is keystroke logged. So every key that you press is logged and sent to China. So you're helping yourself by not having social media on your phone. That's the first thing. And then the last thing I'll say is, if you're going to use screen protectors, you're going to have games on your phone, anything that connects to Steam goes to NSA. Or the CIA. So if you're going to use games, gaming software, especially Discord, they're recording everything that you do and everything you say right from your phone. So I have a very, very small software footprint on my phone. For the most part, it's, pictures and voice calls and email, things that I know that I'll use all the time that isn't communicating two ways. With the exception of, I use Signal and I use text messaging. But other than that, I don't do a whole lot on my phone. So limiting your footprint digitally will limit your footprint digitally outside of your house. And then the other thing is, turn off your Wi-Fi at night. You can program in most of the new routers, you can program to turn off Wi-Fi from specific hours of the night. Because number one, it will disrupt your sleep patterns, especially with some of the new 5G out there. If you haven't had a 5G router in your house, trust me, when you do, it's going to disrupt your sleep patterns. So I have mine set up to turn off between midnight and 8 o'clock in the morning. And I adjust it around. So keep that in mind as you're looking at tech in your house, because it's not just your phone that's transmitting. If you have a TV with a camera on it, if you have Alexa in your house, if you have any Google devices in your house, even the thermostat from Google, all of it's collecting data, all of it's sending data. Most of the home alarm systems are all wired into your Wi-Fi and sending data all the time. And they're collecting live images from your front door. Just like if you have the Ring cameras outside your house, it's collecting and sending all the time too. So you want to limit the amount of data you're sending out of your house at any one time, because all of that can be used to surveil you and collect on you. And you may not think about it, but think about it this way. Think about the coolest tech you have in your house in the hands of your arch enemy and what they can do with it. And trust me, it'll open your eyes to why we're talking about this. Because what we're moving into is we're moving into a period where there's going to be a lot of false flags. They're going to try and roll people up that are conservatives. We're going to see the gamut. So we're trying to help you shut down the emissions as much as possible. So you're only beaconing things that are, for lack of a better word, innocuous. Hopefully that's
Steve, I'd like to chime in on that before we change the subject on the small form devices. I've done threat modeling on these, and I've done threat modeling on some of the what are considered black phones, and they take off the shelf. I think if y'all mute your mics, and we'll lose that. There we are. Hello, hello. Yeah, no more feedback there. So I want you guys to think of something in the audience. When you install things like Session or Signal or whatever these encrypted messaging apps are, and you're typing into these encrypted messaging apps and you screw up some word, and then it presents a list of options to you to choose from, and maybe some people speed type. What's happening is the application that's your touch keyboard opens up an interstitial API to the dictionary thing that has a connection to Google or wherever it's getting it. And all of those inter-process communications for all of the threads that are running on your phone, when you install stuff on your phone, it says, can I have access to the camera? Can I have access to the keyboard? The whatever. They're live all the time. And so you think, oh, well, I wouldn't put anything on TikTok or WeChat that I wouldn't want the world to know about. Well, if TikTok and WeChat have access to all the other processes on your phone, including your camera and your keyboard and everything else, when you're typing, that's when that data is getting straight. So you might be in Telegram, you might be on the internet doing searches, you might even be in a secure SSL application with a little lock on it that's like the assurance that TLS, those two endpoints over the internet are secure, but that doesn't mean that the devices on either side of that encrypted tunnel are secure. And so on your side of the encrypted tunnel on your phone or your computer, when you're typing things into your keyboard, and literally every application that you have on your phone has access to your keyboard all the time, you're just basically sharing everything that you're typing in that encrypted session or that whatever the secure chat or whatever you thought you had with everything else. And the issue with that is you can't put your phone in a lab in promiscuous mode and see all of that data. What are these applications and what are they doing when they're sending data out to the internet? You can see how many kilobytes of information that they're sending in the background if you don't turn them off. But you can't really see the information that they're sending because they have encrypted APIs too. So all the data that's coming out of the phone, just gobbledygook, you know. And if you read the dev notes, oh, well, we send sensing information, we do analytic information, we may, you know, use a motion sensor to see if you're safe or, you know, whatever your patterns of life are. But they're literally taking your data. And I don't want to say don't use your phone or your phone's useless, but you have to think about communication and then the compromise of communication, and then how you use things, countermeasures like communication obfuscation. And like Pizzagate was a perfect example. I guess pizza was like a code name for kids or whatever. So like, I want to order a pizza. Well, that type of communication obfuscation is, hey, Steve, we're going to meet for coffee at 11 o'clock. You good to go? Well, on his side of that, he already knows that that's code word for, you know, we're fucked, burn the CEOI, or we're going to go actually to the cigar bar or whatever. So as you do these types of communication, obfuscation, and countermeasures, those are the things that you would do in a skip or a private room with all the phones on the outside. Steve and I did an exercise where you could do personal authentication by, you know, what direction the bezel is locked in on their watch when you meet them, if you don't know who they are. So those are things beyond communicating, but the phones are always going to be part of our lives, and they're part of everybody's lives everywhere in the world. And if you're like a big social media guy like me with my 12 followers on Telegram or whatever, and all of a sudden I go dark, that's just as big of a red flag as, you know, me not changing my operating patterns at all and then putting compromising information out there. So once you have the hood ornament on your car, you kind of have to leave it on your car. It's just, you got to figure out where to park your car at that point. But I wanted to clarify that. And as far as like those, you know, ATACs that you're talking about, you're right. As amateur radio operators, we'd have guys that would interfere with repeaters, and you could DF or direction find or triangulate on a signal, I mean, pretty instantaneously. So even a low power device like an Android phone, you can triangulate on that pretty instantaneously, because we used to have to do ground grid searches. Well, now you could literally send up drones that have scanning antennas on them. They can lock like an ISR can, like instantly, and then multiple targets. They can say, well, there's 12 guys down there and they're all moving. So
Rupert, did you just admit that you're a sad ham? It sounded like you just admitted you're a sad ham.
I am a ham, yes. So
hams are fine. It sounded like sad ham activity to me. I'm just messing with you.
I'm ham sexy, baby. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of add on that, because I have done a lot of analysis on these types of systems. And when you think that your one app is secure, if your app has an interstitial encrypted API to another app on your phone and they all have authorization to see the same sensing units or, you know, human interface devices that are on your phone, all of those applications, whether or not they're secure when they leave the phone, are still not secure on the phone, meaning that the other devices on your phone are not secure and they're sending your data out securely over another channel. So, I mean, absolutely don't use your phone for anything that you wouldn't want to, you know, share with God.
Just to expand on that a little bit on the keyboard. So again, the importance of having a reasonably secure platform between two parties can't be overstated. So for example, something like Graphene or Calyx, okay, because it's going to run an open source keyboard, okay, that's not going to, because it'll do AI-based learning, like Trooper was saying, and it will figure out your patterns and it's trying to be helpful, right? But it's nosy. Okay. So you can actually go into your settings and disable that. But again, you want to have a keyboard app that's actually open sourced and is transparent. It's kind of beyond the capability of the layman, but you can set up something like Wireshark and actually sit there and watch all the data packets go from your phone or your laptop to wherever it is it's going. And you can see what IP it's going to. You can see what program is sending it. And even if it's encrypted, you know, it's metadata as far as you're concerned. And it's useful in that you can see that, hey, this app is sleeping and shouldn't be doing anything. And it's talking to, oh, Mountain View, California, which happens to be Google headquarters, you know. So things like that are handy. I want to address something I saw in the comments. Somebody was asking about RF blocking pouches. I get asked this a lot. Do they work? I've tested the cheap ones. I've tested the very expensive ones, the ones we were issued. I've had the expensive ones fail. I've had the cheap ones work and everything in between. So test it. Put your phone in it. Call it with a different phone. See if it rings. Okay. Always check it. And they do wear out, because dander and dust and dirt and debris will start working its way through that metallic fabric, and essentially it creates a pass through. And so that signal is able to squirt through. So you do want to clean them periodically with some mild detergent. And, you know, but it is something to have for sure.
If I could ever come off mute, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, I don't realize that this is pretty technical for most of you, but this is one of those conversations that you can't avoid getting into the weeds on, because there's so much information related to the tech that we all take for granted. And look, most of us have forgotten what it's like to be an immigrant to technology, where you're just learning things for the first time. I've been immersed in it for 20 years. We're doing stuff at scale. and, you know, building, you know, massive data centers across the US and pushing all kinds of data. Everything now is about AI learning and AI manipulation of data to figure out patterns in the way you operate, the way you think, the things you believe in, the types of websites that you go to, the things you read, the shows you watch on TV. Because so much is online now, your digital persona is a lot bigger than you think it is. And they can go back, even if you delete things, they can go back 10 years and recover data. If you send an email across an Exchange server, it's sitting somewhere, probably in storage, that can be accessed. So the way to really keep your footprint small is to stay away from a lot of the newest social media platforms, a lot of the AI. And remember, once you put something into AI, it becomes public domain. And you're teaching that AI to do a specific thing, and it could branch out into other pieces of learning that you may not think are important, but it will be important over time. So, and it, you know, this is a, again, this is something we're all going to face moving forward. We're going to deal with AI in the future in everything we do. May it be getting on a train, getting on an airplane. You've already seen the AI at the airport. You just probably don't realize it was AI. All the facial recognition now, it's all AI driven. Almost all of it is AI driven. To where you walk into an airport now, they scan your face. They're already figuring out where you're going. Once you walk in the door, they've already scanned you. They know where you're going. And most of us, since we're in the military or we're with the agencies, they have all of our data. So they have every piece of information on me for the last 20, 30 years. So I'm already in the system. And here's the example I use is when I went to Scotland last year, I didn't show my passport once I left the US. Everywhere I went, it scanned my face. I scanned my passport. Away I went. I didn't talk to any customs people the whole time I was in Europe. And I went to three different countries. And when I came back, walked up to the customs guy. He already knew my name. He had my dossier pulled up. He knew exactly where I was. He even knew which restaurants I was in Europe. They had tracked my credit cards all through Europe, and they knew what hotel they stayed at. They knew what rental car I had. They knew where I got the rental car. I mean, I glanced over at the screen and I saw all this information, and I said, "You guys are tracking everything we're doing outside the country?" And he just looked at me and went, "Yep, have a nice day." So if you think that they don't have information on you, you are sorely mistaken. Go out to your county recorder and go look at how much information is associated with your mortgage on your house and how much information is associated with your marriage that's already in the court records. Anything you do where you engage your identity with any part of the government is logged, and it's all sent to one place. So they have all this information on you that they can harvest. So minimizing your digital footprint is probably the best thing you can do moving forward. And it sounds like a lot of arduous work, but really what it is you're streamlining the things you do, and you're being very selective about where you share your information. So words to live by. You guys want to add anything else before we move on?
Yeah, let me add one more thing. What I don't want to see is that people get blackpilled by this, because this starts to, it's just based on this conversation, it starts to feel like this is something that I can't overcome. And so I'm just going to ignore the problem, because that's typically what I see happening. So I teach courses on this. It's not something we can completely break down in this segment. You know, the Ground Rod series, where I take people from crawl all the way to run. Okay. And this is stuff I've done against foreign governments. I've been out there with, you know, SIGINT and ELINT being used against me. So you can operate this way. Okay, it can be done. You just got to know how to do it. Okay, and you just have to be disciplined. That's all it is. It's just like anything else we do. Okay, whether it's hard skills out in the wood line, dealing with urban problems, dealing with medical problems, whatever. It's, you know, there tends to be a huge vacuum when we get into the subject matter, which is why I wanted to bring it up. You know, there's endless places out there for you to get shooting skills or woodland skills or survival skills or medical skills, or, you know, there's just a vacuum on this. You know, I'm teaching it. Scout does to a degree. There's just not many civilian resources out there for this kind of training. So not to pimp my training, but, you know, you may want to get in front of this stuff.
Well, at least where you want to get to is an understanding of the technology you're using, right? It's like reading the terms of service. Most of us go click, click, click to accept, but we never really read what the terms of service say. If you go read the terms of service on TikTok, you will be fucking horrified at all the things that they've thrown in the terms of service. And if you haven't noticed it over the last year, last 10 months, all of the online providers have updated their terms of service over the last 12 months. And what they've done now is they've added language that allows them to ship your data to the feds, turn off your account at the discretion of the federal government. And you probably don't even realize that you've agreed to that. And they can sell your data. They can determine what content you can browse, what content you can't browse. There's a host of things in terms of service. If you have any account with Google, if you have any accounts with Apple, you should read the terms of service and you'll understand what they can do and what they can't do. Yeah, it's boring legal language, but you need to understand what you're giving away every single time that you click accept. And here's the other way they get you too. Most of you probably don't realize all of the tools that are on your phone that they've turned on that allow you to limit what your kids see and what your kids can monitor. So I'll use the example of Snapchat. So Snapchat, if you don't know what it is, it's a picture application that you can send video or picture, and it supposedly only lasts 10 seconds. And it's really sex chat is what it really is, because when it first came out, all the teenagers were sending nudes across the wire at school, and they were making their rounds around all these schools, and there was a bunch of court cases that came out of it. Well, the thing to remember is there's no such thing as temporary on the internet. There's no such thing as technology that kids can't defeat. You can turn off certain applications on a phone, but they'll go download other social media platforms and do the same thing on other social media platforms. So if you have kids, you need to really pay attention to what they're using and what applications they're into, because you would be surprised at all the things that they're exposed to and how much sexualization, how much cultural messaging is in the social media apps. I mean, just go look at Instagram. For Christ's sake, it's every single picture, every single account. They all look the same. Why? Because they've been groomed to do the same thing. So if you go look at different accounts on Instagram, you can see the commonality in all the pictures, all the videos, everything they do. And their whole lives and their personas are wrapped up in what they have online. What you don't realize is that persona that they're building online is a profile that's being used by the intelligence agencies and by marketers to target them directly. And you would be surprised at how effective they are. Go ahead.
Scott, I know this is your domain still. Yeah, so this is the perfect transition for me to kind of touch this subject. I am absolutely not technical at all when it comes to this. I live in the information environment, you know, agnostic to platform. And, you know, one of the interesting things is, you know, you can be as secure as possible on your own digital footprint. But if other people are talking about you and you're not part of the conversation, then it doesn't matter, right? Whether it's, you know, leaks of your, you know, this is what we talk about in the service with spillage and things like that. If that spills out through other people's accounts, you know, I have a conversation with Joe and we leave our cell phones in the other room, but then he goes and talks, you know, on Signal to his buddy about the conversation he and I just had, then that becomes the kind of, you know, unintended consequences of that, right? So your digital footprint is only as effective as you can keep your name out of other people's mouths, you know?
And let's be honest, we all, if we're here on Rumble, we are using social media, right? Our faces are here on social media. Our names are on here. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys, just like I, we all have TSs or better. And so that means the government has every piece of information that they could ever want about us. And, you know, it's kind of like once that is out there, once the government has that, ultimately, I feel pretty naked and exposed, right? So I avoid, you know, kind of malicious social media such as TikTok and things like that. And you can avoid, but, you know, the Googles and the Apple are the two that's really hard to avoid. It's not that you can't minimize your footprint with those channels, but ultimately they are pervasive in the environment to the point where, you know, if I throw my phone away and I stop using it, I'm still going to have a digital footprint out there. I mean, you guys all saw The Social Network and saw how they basically create a digital clone of you in the algorithm. And the interesting thing is when you find out that you have a shadow account, right? Like I've never had a Facebook account. So how do they have a Facebook account for me? Well, it's because people are talking about you. You know, when your aunt, you know, Hilda decides to take your picture and share it on her Facebook, then all of a sudden Facebook realized here's a new face that I've never seen before. So, okay, we need to create a profile for that. And then Joe shares a picture of me on his Facebook account. So that's two reference points for that new facial profile. So it creates that shadow profile within their network. And then when you finally decide to sign up and you identify yourself as that person, then automatically here's pictures you were tagged in, or here's picture we have tagged you in. It's one thing to be tagged. It's another thing for the network to identify you in other people's pictures that you were never tagged in. So, I mean, that's just the kind of the other side of it. You know, from the information environment, and you know, that doesn't even talk about media and reporting and all these other kind of, you know, digital touch points that we have that are outside of our control. And yeah, I know I look asleep. Thanks, chat, but I'm still jet lagged out. So I appreciate you guys for noticing.
Yeah, a good ad, Scott. They identified one of the J6 guys by his ear.
Yeah.
Literally by his ear. So he shows up somewhere else on a profile 3 years later, bang, the feds are at his house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the world we live in.
Yeah. And I, and that's a good point, Scott, because the point of this conversation is not to blackpill you and get you to throw away all of your technology and go back to two cans and a string. The point is to get you to raise your awareness about what capabilities are being used against you and why. And it's another thing, the other piece of this too, and I've talked about this on SitRep after SitRep. One of the best sources of information is social media like Instagram, Facebook, anything that you put your habits or your preferences or the things that you're passionate about, any of those things that you put online, it's scraped by hundreds of companies, hundreds. And your data is downright sold. So if you really want to protect your kids, then keep them off of social media platforms and monitor what social media platforms they're on. And most importantly, monitor how much time they spend building personas online, because it's very easy for them to get addicted to social media and for their habits to change. You want them to be, you know, I don't know about you, but I wanted my kids to grow up and be kids. I didn't want them to have their face in a phone all the time. And now they're almost everybody that's over the age of 15 has their phone and a face in a phone almost
try
all the time.
Try over the age of 10.
Yeah. Right. Over the age of 10. Changing.
Yeah. My 13-year-old daughter is really upset that she's literally the only kid she knows that doesn't have a phone. She says, Dad, the sixth graders have phones. I don't have a phone. I was like, well.
Bummer.
I'm not their parents, right?
Good for you.
Life's not there.
Yeah, the other thing that I want to touch on real quick, and it kind of gets to what you're talking about with the kids specifically, is get smart with the privacy settings on whatever social media accounts that you do allow. You know, because you're not going to hide anything from Google. You're not going to hide anything from Facebook. What you can hide things from, though, are the people, the other people out there who are using it, you know, especially normie users. I mean, let's be honest, 99% of users are not what you'd call, like, you know, smart power users who are able to really kind of collect on you. They're just people who are, you know, I saw a picture of this guy's daughter. She's cute. I want to find out more about this girl. Right. You know, and so let's be honest, those are the kind of predators out there that we're really worried about. I mean, on a daily basis, I'm not worried about getting my door kicked in by HRT, but I am worried about somebody, you know, trying to, you know, lure my daughter in with a, hey, you want some candy, little girl? You know, that's the thing that I really worry about on a daily basis.
Scott made a really good point. And as far as the information aspect, the weakest point to all this tech stuff isn't the tech, it's the human. And I think it's getting people to recognize that, you know, those commercials with the easy button. There's no easy button. And it's a trap. You know, picture that easy button inside a bear trap. If there's an easy button, don't push it. All right. You have to do the work. You have to put the work in. And the fail point is always going to be the human. You know, like he was saying, I put information out there, I can't control what that other party's doing with it. But I can try to train those guys, and I can be disciplined as far as what I'm putting out, how I'm saying it, what the content is. As far as like kids, you know, I'll just give you an easy fix right now. For households, get yourself an open source router and load the router with a privacy respecting and family friendly DNS service. Okay, so this is going to be something like HTTPS DNS or a DOT DNS over TLS, not one of the big DNS providers, because most people don't even think about DNS. It's kind of just this abstraction that happens in the background when they type in a URL, okay? But that is a big source of data retention, for one. Google is the primary ISP choice for DNS resolving out there. So all that stuff gets logged, every search you do, every lookup you do, that gets shipped off to Fort Meade. Not to mention non-governmental bad actors can also peruse that data. So easy fix, implement a block list at the router, because it doesn't matter what their device is doing. You can do it at the device level as well. And, you know, I'm with Scott. My kids did not have personal devices until they were out on their own. Okay. But that's going to stop 90% of that from being able to occur. You lock it down so they can't gain access to the administration in that router and everything in the household that's going out, because that's a choke point, a digital choke point, and you can have control of it. Again, that doesn't mean some crafty teenager can't figure out a way around. There's always a way. But that's going to stop the bulk of that. You can block the porn. You can block the, you know, the malware sites. You can block the, you know, fun fact about TikTok as an app, it installed a rootkit in everyone's phone that retained itself on the handset after the app was uninstalled. So the CCP had a big hand in the crafting of this application, this TikTok application. Why the hell this thing was not kicked out of our country, I don't know. Well, I can guess, but yeah. So here's a freebie. If you've ever had TikTok on your phone's compromised more than it already is just by virtue of being Apple or Google. So.
Yeah. And one thing to remind everybody of is this is, we're talking about defensive strategies for you. We're not talking about social engineering where somebody's calling you trying to harvest information. That's a whole separate topic. This is just safeguarding your personal information, but more importantly, safeguarding your kids. And for those of you who don't know what DNS is, it's domain name services. Every time you send a www address and hit send on your browser, it goes out to domain name services, resolves to an IP address, and then sends back the information from that IP address and does a round robin to give you the web pages and everything else that you're browsing. That's what it does. So if you want to block a bunch of bad sites, there are open source home-based DNS that you can buy that will block all the known porn sites, all the bad blacklist sites. It's basically got a whitelist and a blacklist of good things that you can go to and bad things that it'll keep you away from. It's money well spent if you have kids and you're busy, gone, working, whatever the case may be. It's a good way to make sure that at least some of the younger kids won't get into things they shouldn't. Because look, everything that your kids see is sexualized now, almost everything. So you have to be hyper vigilant with what they're seeing. Even games like Fortnite, which is a kid's game. I play it every so often, and I can tell you, it's everything's a rainbow. Everything's about sexual orientation, and it's subtle. It's not overt. It's very, very subtle how they do it. And over time, if you beat the drum long enough, people start to believe that a triangle is a square. And that's what the game is, to beat you down to the point where you buy into all these narratives and you buy into all of their belief system. So the more you can shelter your kids away from it, the better off they're going to be when they get older. And more importantly, the other thing that that I beat into my kids, and this is what I want to segue into, is situational awareness. Most of us, when we're in our phone, we're not situationally aware to what's going on around us. And kids especially, they have, under the age of like 14, they have zero concept of danger around them. And it's incumbent upon us to teach them, hey, like walking through an airport, if your kids are way out in front of you and you don't have line of sight on them, guess what? Somebody could just grab them and take them off and you would never see them again in a crowded airport, especially an airport like O'Hare or LAX. I mean, the place is immense. There's lots of places people can hide. And trust me, kids will be gone quick. And every time they have their head in their phone, they're not paying attention to what's going on around them. So it all starts with paying attention to what they're doing, paying attention to their habits, paying attention to how much information they're putting online. All of that will pay dividends when they get older, because they'll see their friends immersed in it. And it really is an addiction. When you take a phone away from a 14-year-old that's been on social media all day, they will lose their fucking minds. And it's a behavioral thing as much as it's a safety thing. So that's why we're talking about it. So we should probably transition. You want to talk situational awareness and then get to Venezuela and start talking through some of that? Or do you want to skip situational awareness and go to Venezuela and then come back to it?
If I could just say one thing about situational awareness and you know, we mentioned social engineering earlier, and what you're talking about is information collection through, kind of no-tech hacking, right? There is a different type of social engineer that's going on, and it's entertainment, but at the same time, if you look at the kids nowadays, right? Especially teenagers now. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but it's like, TikTok brain or, hyper ADHD or, and what this is that it comes from them getting programmed into watching like YouTube shorts or TikTok videos, these 15 second videos that, I'm sure we've all seen it. They're entertaining and you watch them for a couple minutes, you get sucked in, but then you kind of go away from it because they're just not engaging, right? Well, they are learning a new way of brain processing that makes it harder for them to take in anything long form, right? To the point where I've noticed it less so in my kids, but other kids, they literally can't sit down and watch an entire movie now because they can't dedicate, they can't focus, or they'll have to get their phone involved. And even though they're watching a movie that they want to watch, they've got their phone and they have to, it's like a quick hit, right? So this is that kind of, tertiary kind of behavioral adjustment that's occurring and that makes it hard for them to pay attention to the environment and to see threats the way, you know, in the old days when, you know, I don't know about you guys, but going hunting or something like that, sitting in a position and just doing nothing, right? You know, made it much easier for us to focus on our surroundings and understand what's around us. And so the modern world is making it easier for predators to prey on us, regardless of what their intentions are.
I could, if I could come off mute, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, that's a great point. The, you know, so many thoughts about that, right? Because that is, they are programming kids to take in 15-second sound bites and make emotional decisions. I mean, there's a lot around that one, just that one sentence, because it's not just that they can't pay attention. It's that they're always hyper sensitive to just about anything in front of them. And you can see it. You can see it just the conversations they have with other kids is way different than it was when we were kids. Think about, I mean, look, when you're under 15, there's no volume control. You're, you know, it's constant noise, constant movement, right? That's being a kid. But when you get over to a certain age, like 13, 14, right in middle school, that's when you start to see this shift towards this really toxic cultural narrative. And it's all about, how do I eviscerate everybody around me to be the top dog? And they've learned that shit on, there was an app called ask.me. And then there was another one, what was it called? Where it was basically you would post questions about yourself that other people would answer, right? And that metamorphosized into Snapchat and into Instagram. And if you go out and look at what happens to somebody who becomes famous on Instagram quickly, they just get eviscerated by the public, because you're taught to pay attention short term. You're taught to attack anybody that's successful. You're taught to attack anybody that goes against the group think. I mean, it's a very, very insidious stepping stone programming the cultural narrative. And you can see it play out. And that's just one aspect of it, right? So you're talking about the aspect of the toxicity. You're talking about the aspect of the short attention span and of the lack of focus, right? And discipline. But there's other aspects to that too. And that is creating this narcissistic, I guess for lack of a better word, just creating narcissists.
Well, specifically to that point, right? You know, one of the things that we all kind of, you know, especially guys from our generation, we look at what's going on in the world around us. And we're like, you know, where did all these trans kids come from and things like that, right? And there is a specific social engineering piece that creates this environment that allows kids to embrace something that is, let's be honest, it's not real. You know, all kids, especially in puberty, go through weird times, right? And, you know, for some, it's just a kind of, maybe it was, you know, some guys remember, you know, your voice would get a little husky or froggy for, you know, and then get a little deeper. Or, you know, for girls, I know it's more, I would say maybe acute and maybe even more severe. But what you're getting is this, like, they're like, oh, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm in my right body, you know, because my body's changing. And then they go into some Snapchat with other kids and then they get this love bomb, right? So, oh no, then you're really a guy. You're right. You're not a girl. You're a guy. You're trans, right? And so, and they're like, what? And then they, oh, if they say that, if they bite into any of what that group is selling, then they get love bombed, right? And they get this kind of artificial support that makes them, oh my gosh, I'm part of something. I feel, you know, it's okay to feel the way I'm feeling, you know? And then they get led down that primrose path to chemical castration and all the other evils that are going on around this, right? That's just one example. You know, back in our day, it was more like that's how people got sucked into cults, right? But cults were pretty, that was more the analog version of what's happening with the trans movement. What we're seeing with the trans movement specifically, and there are other, you know, pro-Palestine, the neo-Marxist movements, all these kind of viral, you know, mind viruses that are getting spread are able to do it at scale with the use of social media, because, you know, you're just able, one person can talk to millions of people, whereas in the past they may only be able to talk to 10. So.
Well, it's also generating children who don't want to interact in the real world with anyone else. We're seeing children want to cross the road away from other people, don't want to talk to them, don't want to be face to face and interact. That serves someone else's agenda, not ours. But it is one of the side effects of everything that we just talked about.
Yeah. And the other piece of that, too, is that they, you know, the other, this is another dangerous piece, too, is they put all their feelings, they put all of their activities, so much of their private life is put online, right? Because they get all their validation from their friends online. So you have this, like you said, fake support system, and you'll go put things out there like, I'm having a really bad day. I just broke up with my boyfriend. I lost my job. You know, I've got a surgery coming up. Every part of their life is online. And they fight via application, either text or application. They don't even sit next to each other and fucking scream at each other anymore. They sit there and text. They'll be across the table texting. Like, I'm watching this going on, and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Put your phones down. What are you pissed off about? What are you pissed off about? They don't even know how to interact. That's how bad social media has programmed kids away from just interaction and human connections, right? They don't even know how to do it. So you're building not just isolation, but you're building this narcissistic culture where they're only concerned with what's right here, nothing else. They can't see anything else. And the other thing that's been trained in schools is it's okay to have a lack of privacy. It's okay to give your information away. Well, they're collecting all my information. That's all right. You're not doing anything that's illegal. That's the Chinese side of this that's programming. It's okay for you to give up your civil rights, your big R rights. And go ask a 20-something about what their rights are. They don't have the first fucking clue. Most of them haven't even read the Constitution. They don't even know what a big R right is. In fact, here's the test. Go ask kids what the Fourth Amendment is. They're not going to be able to tell you anything out of the First and Second Amendment. They don't know shit about the Constitution because they don't teach it in school. And then on top of that, social media reinforces that it's okay for you not to have any rights whatsoever. And then there's the mentality, the attack mentality, which I was talking about earlier. I mean, it's a very, very, very addictive culture that lends itself for people putting all their private information online. And they learn at an early age. So if you can safeguard your kids from that, I would say get active, get involved, and get in touch and figure out what they're doing. And, you know, it's not going to hurt them to take away their phones. It's not going to hurt them to leave their phones at home. They don't need them in school. And who cares if they're popular?
Yeah, if you keep your kids off social media, you're doing them a massive favor. And, I mean, let's be honest. If we go back to the origins of social media, I think it's common knowledge at this point that that was a creation out of the Pentagon, the initial one. It got seed money from some three-letter agencies, and it was designed as a passive collection tool. So it's now kind of run the gamut to where it's not just a passive collection tool at this point. It's now, you know, actually implanting ideas and concepts to where it's actually steering and shaping the narrative of kind of the hive mind, if I can use that phrase. So kids are susceptible to this. I mean, they absolutely are. I mean, for crying out, adults are susceptible to it. Kids even more so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. The entire internet was a creation of the DOD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ARPANET.
Yeah. Stop connecting your refrigerators and your stoves and your washer and dryers to the internet. It's absolutely ridiculous and unnecessary.
Yeah. Convenience kills.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I have I've disconnected everything but pretty much my phone and my TV online. That's it. No cameras outside the house. Nothing streaming outside the house. Period. Nothing inside the house is connected. There's no point. I mean, ask yourself a question. Why do you need to adjust your thermostat when you're at dinner? You don't. You walk in the door and you go dot, 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 and away you go.
Because just remember, cool. if you can adjust it from the internet, so can the government.
Yeah, right. Good point. All right, let's move on to Venezuela, because I think there's a pretty good story brewing there that I think is somewhat fiction, somewhat real, somewhat concocted. First question is this CIA op, or is this legitimate, you know, people trying to overthrow a government, or is it just hype?
If you want to know if it's a CIA op, I would like everyone to go and quickly binge watch season 2 of Jack Ryan on Amazon, because that's literally what has happened in Venezuela. So
I wasn't going to say that. So thanks for taking that time.
Oh, yeah.
Saying it for me. I was just thinking about that this morning. I think it's going to be a big nothing burger. I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
Well, I think they're going to kill an awful lot of civilians. Yeah, I think they're going to kill a lot of civilians, and it's going to go back to the status quo.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, and this is like the rage we're seeing in Ireland. This is like the rage we're seeing in France and a lot of Western Europe, that now for decades is finally waking up one day and realizing, oh shit, our country's gone. We're a gross minority in our own land, and the rape gangs are out of control. And if you have the audacity to notice the rape gangs and notice that they're outsiders, you go to jail. And you know who's sending them to jail? The cops. So once again, we're back to, I got a beef with the thin blue line people every time. I'm sick of hearing that the cops are going to be on our side. All evidence to the contrary. We've been watching this shit for years, and the cops are going to be on the cop side. They're going to make sure they're getting their pension. They're going to make sure that they're not getting in trouble. That's how that works. If they're not toeing the line, they're not going to be cops very long.
Well, yeah, they'll stop being cops when they see an advantage to going over to the other side. And oh, by the way, they'll do it so they can continue being a cop, right?
Yeah. Yep.
We've been talking about this on Future Conflict quite a bit. We kind of saw it coming on Monday after the election stuff, and ironically enough, we asked a lot of the questions that, you know, we have now answered today. Like on Monday's show, it was the here are the questions, and then on today's show, here were the answers to those questions, right? Because, you know, we've seen over the last 48 hours, it kind of developed the way we think. Now, in my personal opinion, I think it was, 2017 or 2018, they had another kind of uprising in, you know, a pretty significant one in Caracas. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what year it was. Anyway, point is I'm not seeing anything materially different with this one than what we saw with that one. In fact, if I remember correctly, there was more military involvement in the beginning of that one. So I think the bottom line is we'll know if it's a CIA operation if it's successful. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't think Maduro is that strong. I think he is kind of held up by forces other than himself, i.e. I think there is some IRGC involvement. I think Cuba is heavily involved. Russia is obviously involved. Less so China, but China definitely has their fingers in the pie. And to that end, I don't think that I honestly don't think the CIA is pushing this yet. And if they decided to push it, I think it would be more successful.
And I think it's important to note, as we did this morning on our show, there's still, I think, about a regiment of IRGC troops there for an exercise that just so happened to coincide with the election. So there are Iranian troops in the area.
And there are planes bringing additional Cuban troops in, specifically, I think, some of their special operators.
I have so many thoughts right now. I can't pick one to bust on because there's so many different pieces of it, which is funny. But Yeah, when I first saw it, I'm like, that's CIA. I mean, because at the end of the day, what are they going to do? They're going to replace a middle manager with another middle manager. They're going to prop up the currency and then start harvesting oil and sending it back, you know, send the petrodollar back here. We already know the game, right? Nothing's going to change on the ground there. It's just going to be the name of the person that's blamed for everything. So I don't see much change there happening in the next 10 years until people are completely fed up. And if you're using the U.S. as a bellwether, then it's going to be a long time before there's regime change there. Just thinking out loud.
You know, one of the things that we hadn't really broached this on our show, but I think this is something to think about, is Venezuela's been causing a lot of trouble for Exxon in the offshore development in Guyana. And, you know, that's, you know, you don't need to kind of overthrow Maduro, but if you destabilize Venezuela to the point where they can't go on any kind of extraterritorial adventures, I think that makes a lot of sense. But in order for that to kind of, that, you know, that thought to fully unthread, I think that we have to see some sort of degradation to their military capabilities. And I haven't really seen that yet.
Yeah, I talked about that today earlier on. I did a show with Tom Luongo today, and we were talking about some of that on the show, and all of it revolves around the petrodollar. And I'm sure it's just destabilization to keep the oil flowing out of Guyana. That would be right in the wheelhouse. That makes a hell of a lot more sense than they want to get rid of a middle manager, or they would invest heavily into throwing him out with the Russian presence there. So, okay, coming up on hour and a half, hour 20 minutes. Let's do closing comments, and then we'll wrap it up at half past the hour here. Who wants to start closing comments? Troop, are you driving?
No, I'm passengering. I was just reflecting on all of this. So I have an Android Samsung phone, and it has a little security thing that always comes up, and I always swipe to the left. I don't give a shit. And I always uninstall all the bullshit apps on my phone. And it's ridiculous that you get a security update and then it reinstalls Monopoly Go and Tide Pod Tetris, and you can't find it because it's like three screens over, and then you got to go three screens over and uninstall the same unsecure bullshit on your phone that the security update put on there against your will. So just think about that. Start communicating with people. And you're right, as far as this digital thing, it always confused me why they had those dating apps where you can kind of like, you know, add herpes to shopping cart. Like, just go and fucking talk to a woman and then start a relationship. Like, you know in 5 seconds if you like her or not. But this is, you know, kind of how the world works. But it also makes it easier for people who use social engineering to get into secure facilities like me to just completely fucking bombard people with like real life to the point where they're stunned. So it's, I really have a lot of concerns about the goldfish amount of intellect that a lot of people who are at the front desk of a lot of different places have, because it's just more dangerous than just systems and the lack of awareness, the lack of situational awareness. Like, we're all operating in the yellow. If anybody knows what the color codes are, most people are in the white or white noise. We already got over this thing where everybody now, I think they've mastered the ability to drive a 2-ton vehicle while they're Facebooking, but it goes a lot deeper than that. So if you're one of those people, don't even worry about the security on your phone. You're already compromised and you're probably going to die anyway. So that's all I got.
On that note, Scott, Joe, you guys, I'll let you guys.
Well, we're getting ready to hold a big event, an annual event for our fans in partnership with Shield Arms out in Montana. So if you find yourself in the Pacific Northwest this weekend, come on by Camp Ponderosa in Big Fork, Montana. We'll be here all weekend shaking hands, and we will drink any whiskey you want to bring us, smoke any cigar you want to bring us. And we're going to have some good speakers out here, Joe Fox from Viking Preparedness and a few others. We're going to have a good time. But I just urge everyone to really pay close attention to the digital information you put out there. Pay attention to the risk level that's going up over the tit for tat Israel and Iran stuff. We've seen the tit from Israel. We're waiting for the tat from Iran, which is going to be significant. And if I know Iran, it's probably going to be asymmetrical, and it could happen anywhere. It could happen in the West. It could happen anywhere. So pay attention and be alert.
Yeah, I just echo what Joe just said. I think the one thing that we didn't talk about at all really here today that I think is very worth people's attention would be monitoring the situation between Israel and Iran. I think you'll find out if Iran is asymmetric only based on how they respond to this. If they try to respond conventionally in any fashion, I think that's an interesting indication as well. And so just kind of watch out for Iran's response. The other thing that I would say is if you want to find a great place to find out about that, three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we do Council on Future Conflict on the Future Conflict channel on YouTube and Rumble. It's a pretty good place. You know, we kind of cover some of the stuff that we talked about today. But in a, you know, we are entirely focused on actual, events and things like that, less on nitty gritty kind of topics. So that's why it's great that all these different channels exist, because we all kind of hit similar things from different angles. And so I really appreciate what you guys, talk, you know, the technical piece today. So, thanks for bringing that to my attention. And the last thing I'd say is just to echo what Joe said about the shieldfielddays.com is the website for the event. If you can't come, that's great. Just maybe share it around. If you know some people that are in Montana or Idaho or this area, you think this might be something they'd be interested in. I think it's important in this world of digital stuff that we're talking about to meet people in person. Don't be so scared of paranoia and all this kind of stuff that you don't go out and meet people. Know your right and left limits when it comes to things that you should and shouldn't talk about. That's just basic OPSEC. And meet some of the people in the real world. I mean, you know, it's if things go bad and we have to throw our phones away, having those real world connections is going to be invaluable. So no time like the present to start making those.
Chris?
So one thing I would leave everyone with is start practicing your awareness, whether you want to call it SA, situational awareness. I just call it awareness in general, because it's become a lost art. If you go back to our agrarian forebearers, their awareness was at the horizon line because it had to be. Okay. And over the years, through industrialization and through tech, it's now about here where people hold their phone. And we've seen the funny videos of you know, women walking into fountains, walking into traffic, people are getting hurt because they're so absorbed into their phone. And it's not about the phone. It's that their bubble of awareness, that protective shield around them, has shrunk so close to them that it essentially doesn't matter anymore. Okay. So how do you practice awareness? Simple things. Okay. You drive. Everybody here probably drives a car. You're in traffic. Go up to a stoplight, look at the people to your left, look at the people to your right. Most people don't do this, okay, because of weird social stigmas, okay? Take note of the color of the cars around you, the make, the model, maybe the plate numbers. And so you're building those circuits. You're starting to practice actually doing that. When you go and seat yourself in a restaurant, seat yourself strategically, seat yourself where it's going to give you some kind of appreciable advantage if something bad happened. Take note of the people in the bar, in the restaurant. You know, there's a million different ways you can practice this. I travel a lot because I'm teaching all over. I love going through hotels because I'm practicing clearing my dead spaces. I'm clearing just as I'm walking around. I'm not being a weirdo and holding up a finger gun, but I'm just clearing those spaces and practicing. So you always want to continually be practicing that. When I move through my house, I'm clearing spaces as I move through my house. Those are free opportunities to train and to practice. So work your awareness piece, because that is the cornerstone of every skill set, okay, that matters. Everything else builds off of that, whether they're kinetic hard skills, whether they're tech skills, whether they're, you know, intelligence, signals intelligence, it doesn't matter. All that stuff is built off awareness. Okay. So that is the best thing you can do for yourself right now, is learn to be better aware of what's going on around you. That's all I got.
Good stuff. And I'll piggyback on that a little bit, because on Monday I talked about, on the sit rep, I talked about the importance of using your gear now and getting ready for what's coming. If you watch the show I did earlier with Tommy Kerrigan on Tommy's podcast on Rumble, I'll post the link in the comments with Tom Luongo. We talked about the fact that everybody, and this is a poll for everybody that's in the chat. How many of you think that we're on the event horizon of something big happening? I will tell you that everybody I've talked to in the last couple of weeks, and I've gotten some weird fucking phone calls, everybody thinks the same thing. Something big is coming. Whether that's a conflict, which I think we're on the doorstep of, and Joe's right, pay attention to what's going on with Israel, because Netanyahu has an existential crisis that he has to escalate the war. Because when this stops, he's done. They're gonna probably throw him in jail, and they probably should. And more and more information is coming out that the Israelis fired on their own people, and that's making its way to the light. And then the disclosure today about one of the German senior leaders, one of the most green people in Germany, was outed today for using public funds. And seeing a male escort, that those disclosures are going to be coming fast and furious now, because what you're watching is a fight among the elite. They're basically, it's a big dick waving contest to see who's going to crack first. So now's the time to use your gear. Now's the time to lock down your tech. Now's the time to pay attention to your surroundings and pay attention to what's going on, not just in your area, but what's going on in your neighborhood, who belongs there, who doesn't belong there. You should be asking those questions every day. You should be looking around your neighborhood to see if there's any new faces. I can tell you that they're building a chip plant about 2 miles away from my house, and I have seen more Taiwanese in this neighborhood just in the last month. In fact, every house that's sold here in the last 6 months has gone to a Taiwanese either investment house, another investment house out of China, or investment houses that are both funded and sponsored by either Chinese or Taiwanese companies. So you're seeing the demographics change in front of you. Pay attention to that, because we're only going to see more of this. And Scott was right. Countries are waking up and realizing that the demographics have changed and they've lost their country. And, you know, to steal a quote from Troop, you should be 80% ready 100% of the time. So that means use your shit. And don't think you're going to figure it out, break the box open once everything turns to shit, because you're not. You can ask Spudhut about that one. So pay attention over the next couple of weeks. Things are going to be coming fast and furious. Stay out of the tech space. Stay out of the emotional space. Stay in the situational awareness space. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern, with another roundtable, and we'll continue the discussion, because some of these topics we're going to keep talking about over the next couple of weeks. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on. Scott, appreciate you taking the time to come on the show tonight. I'll post the link for their shows, as well as I'll post the link for Troops, Trooper Care Network, and Combat Studies Group. I highly suggest, if you can, make it out to Montana and go take one of Chris's classes, or go take one of Joe's classes. Get ready, folks. It's coming whether you like it or not. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Hoorah.